You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Amy Truman. Good morning, Amy. It's good to have you here.
Good morning. It's great to be here, Eric.
So the way we start the show is with the big question. Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many different directions I can go with that question. Some of my labels are mother and wife, retired dean of student life at TC3. I was there for 35 years, so that still is
that
a big
was a
part
long
of
life
me.
Of, yeah.
Yes, it was. Quilter. I have played many roles, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those. But identity-wise, who am I is more about a feminist, Jewish by tradition, not so much by religion, but that's an important part of who I am.
Sure.
Athlete is another important part of my identity, I guess, and dog lover, and why don't we leave it at that and see where we touch down the road.
And you brought some music with you, and we're going to start with You're the One That I Want, the John Travolta, Olivia Newton, John piece from Grease. Do you want to say a bit about it before we hear it, or do you want to speak to it afterwards?
Well, I'll tell you that when you asked me to bring some music, I knew that I had to bring some soundtrack piece, because show and movie soundtracks were really important to me growing up. And I chose this one because in addition to it being wonderful and significant for me when I was growing up, my youngest son also played the John Travolta role in Grease in high school. And so it has double meaning for me.
I see. Okay. So here we go.
Flying, and I'm losing control, 'cause the power you're supplying, it's electrifying. It's electrifying.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amy Truman. So, Amy, you have had a lot of experiences and wear a lot of labels, as most of us do, when we get down to it. But the quality of life that you like to live now, your values and your commitments, what were the experiences that helped shape you to come to understand that's what you need to do? That's how you will feel like you are living the life you need to live.
Oh my goodness! There are so many pieces.
Pick a big one. Some big ones. Yeah.
Well, we'll maybe go a little bit chronologically. Certainly, growing up, I lived in a house, very traditional kind of family. But my parents, though they had very traditional kinds of jobs, my mom was a teacher and my dad was an insurance broker, were also artists. And they loved beauty and they loved their family. And I think those are two of my core pieces that have carried through my life. And it took a while. I kind of wasn't so aware of those pieces during the middle part of my life, being very busy doing lots of things.
Right, right. Career and now, and kids and whatnot, yeah.
Yes, and now that I have a little more time to think about it, I realize how core those two pieces are, family and beauty. And family extends, it certainly is about my actual family, but it extends to other people as well, caring about people.
I don't want to sidetrack you, but I want to come in here. The relationship between an aesthetic appreciation and the cultivation of a relationship is what I'm hearing and what you're saying. Am I getting it?
I hadn't thought about it that way. I thought about them as two different pieces that are very,
sure,
very
sure.
Core
okay, yeah,
to
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
There probably is some way of thinking about them in connection.
So how are they? How do you hold them now in your life?
Well, sometimes I think about them separately because when I do my art, I do it very individually. I go off into my sewing room and quilt. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. And I love that. And it's a peaceful kind of time for myself. And the other piece of me is... being with my family when I can be. I have a fabulous relationship with my husband. I'm very lucky. We do a lot of things together. And my kids are all grown, but I have one daughter and two grandkids in town. The others are all out of town, so I don't see them as much as I would love to, but we talk when we can, and
sure.
We maintain that relationship as families do long distance.
And you said that there are other people that there are as family. I mean, in a certain sense, one of the things that I've learned is we need 30 to 70 people in our lives at various distances and closeness. And that's kind of a functional extended family. And we tend to make them up even if we don't have them biologically.
That's absolutely true. Having a sense of community is an incredibly important thing. And again, through my life, in different places and different stages, if I have a sense of community, I'm feeling good. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a sense of community, I'm not feeling as grounded or okay with what's going on. And so, actually, one of the wonderful things about my retirement, I was leaving one of my families, the TC3 family. I was there for 35 years. That develops quite a sense of community. And there are so many wonderful people out there. So leaving that, I actually did some conscientious work to prepare myself for that. And I've made other connections. Well, certainly I have the Quilters Guild is one of my communities, which is fabulous. And that I've had for about 15 years or so. I've been part of that organization. And it is a warm and welcoming and celebratory community. that of course combines with my art and my love of beauty, because we do a show and tell at the end of every meeting, and we see the beautiful things that everybody's doing and inspire each other and talk about it. So that's one of my communities. But the other thing that I've done recently is taken up a new sport, which is pickleball, which many people have not heard of.
I don't think
it has nothing to do with pickles. It's kind of a cross between tennis and badminton and ping pong. It's played on a smaller tennis court with paddles and wiffle balls, and it's a fun game. It's very fast, but not as fast or as much running as tennis. Mm-hmm. So for someone my age, it's good to slow down a little bit from tennis.
It's not as hard on your elbows or your shoulders.
A little bit of tennis elbow from it, but it's worth it. A lot of people in this community are playing, and so we go to Cass Park in the morning, and lots of people show up, and we play together. And it's a very social sport, and it's another sense of community. So it was a wonderful filler for that vacuum that I was leaving from work. So there are many. There are also groups of friends that I have, you know, who I've had for decades, who are other members of my family. Really,
right. And when work becomes community, it ceases to be that institutional organizational relationship alone. It has things get blurred. And how you've entered it and how you exit it make a whole lot of difference, but in different ways, and sometimes non-intuitive ways, because it's not about your role anymore; it's about your presence.
That's right.
Yeah. So, how did you make that intentional? What did you do to make that an intentional moving on?
Well, I went and saw a counselor. Uh-huh. For 27 years, my role at TC3 was as a counselor.
Right.
And so if I didn't believe in that kind of work, it would be sort of embarrassing. And so about a year before my retirement, I started to see a wonderful woman here in town who really helped me kind of think about what the dynamics might be like, what mm-hmm. I wanted to focus on. She worked with me with a kind of mindfulness framework that I found wonderful. So that's another new piece in my life that I've been working on, trying to meditate regularly and stay present and manage the transition mm-hmm. in that way.
And we'll pick up on that piece towards the end of the show. But at the when you leave an institution and you remove yourself from a role, people there are boundaries around mm-hmm. that, and those are recognizable and honored. But the community piece is less bounded and more ambiguous, and you're more just equals, even though you may not be in terms of the institutional structure, but you are as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it awkward and very important to think through.
It is, and there are folks who I've seen regularly since then mm-hmm. who have been friends for many years, and others who I really care about, and we have wonderful relationships, but it was primarily in the organization, and so I don't see them as often.
Right.
And I miss those contacts, but I also have to let them, let some of it go.
Right, and they in a community, we each define the relationship from our point of view.
Right.
There is no bounding organization around it to tell us what it is.
That's
and
right.
That's something we're not real good about thinking about as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you started out with the art and the family as important learnings. Where were you going to go to next? You said you just wanted to start earlier in your life, and then I interrupted you.
Oh, well, I think that those pieces carry mm-hmm. through. As I look back on my life, I don't know at the time I realized what was happening, but my mother's art was often textile-related art. She was an amazing sewer. She made all her clothes. She did a lot of interior design and decorating, and so I didn't always appreciate it because she wanted to sew me clothes and I wanted to go out and buy clothes to be more similar to the other kids.
Yes, I have a sister who has that as her major story of going to college.
but When I came to Cornell, every time I had an important event, she would send me up a gorgeous dress, and my dad, who made jewelry, would send me up a piece of jewelry to go with it. And
wow.
So I was incredibly lucky. And as I went on, I spent a year in Colorado, and earned some of my living by sewing yoga pants for people at the massage school. And so I of course learned to sew, and those little pieces just kind of pop up along the way, the connections that were made. Of course, family has always been really important. I grew up with a very extended family. First and second cousins met once a month.
Wow.
We had something called a family circle. And once a month, we all got together. My grandmother had four sisters. And so the five sisters and all the kids and all the grandkids would get together monthly. And so that extended family is really important to me. And I still see, even though we've spread out across the country, we see each other as often as we can. And we're important pieces in each other's lives.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm very lucky that way.
Yeah, no, that is a powerful story. And not only that you did it, but that you lived close enough to be able to do that too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit of a sadness that my generation didn't stay that close.
Well, your generation and the people just before you, right after World War II, moved the furthest of people. But by the mid-1970s and 80s, those moves began to taper down. Ithaca is a small metropolitan area, so our kids tend to go far because there's not a lot here. But most of the rest of America is staying fairly close to home.
Is that the dynamic?
That's the dynamic. And we don't tend to be aware of it here because kids come and go, and our kids can't find jobs here.
That's right.
Because there's not a big enough market for them for their specific interests. So, yeah, it's an interesting twist on times. What should we play next musically? While you think, I'm going to do the station ID. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this episode is Amy Truman.
Well, we're talking about family, so why don't we play Forever Young?
Okay, here we go.
May the good Lord be with you down every road you roam. And may sunshine and happiness surround you when you're far from home. And may you grow to be proud, dignified and true. And do unto others as you'd have done to you. Be courageous and be brave. And in my heart, you'll always stay forever young. Forever young. May good fortune be with you, may your guiding light be strong. Build a stairway to heaven with a prince or a vagabond. And may you never love in vain. And in my heart, you'll always remain forever young, forever young, forever young, forever young, forever young. Thank you. And when you finally fly away, I'll be hoping that I served you well. For all the wisdom of a lifetime, no one can ever tell. But whatever road you choose, I'm right behind you, win or lose. Forever young, forever young, forever.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amy Truman. So, Amy, as part of the local Quilters Guild, you all have an event coming up. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, it's very exciting. Next weekend is our Traditions and Beyond Quilt Show. We have a show every 2 years, and it'll be out at TC3 in the Field House, and it's a pretty amazing event. It fills the Field House, which is a very large structure, with beautiful quilts of all kinds of styles, colors, everything that you can imagine, from very small to huge king size quilts, and some dolls, mm-hmm. That are made of fabric and clothing, and we have vendors and quilt turnings and trunk shows, which mean a quilt turning is when you show a variety of antique quilts, mm-hmm. and we have people in the guild who are very knowledgeable about the history of different fabrics and different dyes, mm-hmm. and they explain that. It's fascinating. And of course, the Modern Quilt Guild is going to do a trunk show, so very different styles of right. quilts will be right. in that particular piece. So we put a lot of work into it, and I think that people would enjoy coming and seeing, whether you're into actually making quilts or just love to look at beautiful, colorful things.
Right. How did you get involved in quilting?
Well, actually, one of the last quilts that my mom made before she died was one for me. And she died fairly young. She was only 69. And she finished it, just a few months before she passed. And it just happened that, a few months after she died, I was walking in the mall, and there was a table set up, and there was something about quilts. So I went up and chatted with people, and a show was coming up. This was, in the late 90s or early 2000s. I'm not sure exactly. And so I spoke with the women, and they said that there was a show that was happening, and I had this beautiful quilt that she had made, and you don't have to only put in quilts that you've produced, so I put two of my mom's quilts into the show uh-huh. that year, and I went to a meeting, and I was immediately hooked, because as I said, we do show and tell,
right,
and so
right,
I saw right, right. all the amazing things that other people were doing, and I was already, to some extent, a sewer, mm-hmm. And so I said, oh my goodness, I have to start doing this. And I've been hooked ever since.
Wow.
It's
wow.
I do a very different style. I don't know if you're familiar with it. She did applique, which mm-hmm. means sewing pieces of fabric onto another piece of fabric.
Onto a sheet of fabric, yeah.
I do more piecing, which sure. means sewing pieces
which
together.
Which is the more traditional, or are they both equally traditional? But I associate the piecing being.
But, right. I think they both are different traditions,
sure.
but both can be pretty traditional, yep. and both can be very contemporary as well.
Right.
So, so they're different, but it feels like a wonderful connection to her.
Yeah.
And so that's what
neat.
Got me going.
My great grandmother did both applique and quilting, and she made enough quilt tops. She pieced together enough tops that all of her, I don't know, 15 grandchildren, great-grandchildren would have one of her pieces of work. And some of them didn't get quilted until 50 years after she died.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it's part of my family tradition. And one of my sisters said at the marriage of our, the generation of our children, that we're going to make quilts. And so we make a cousin's quilt for every one of the 15 first cousins that they get at when they become a doctor, a physician, or they become get married, or they have a child, or whatever is a major life passage. They get handed their quilt that is hand. It's machine pieced, but it's hand quilted.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's hand quilted in Northwest Missouri, which is where our ancestors are from, as well as every place where we live.
Oh, that's a great connection.
Yeah, so when I was asked about featuring the quilting, the quilt show, this was a no-brainer for me. we just had my daughter's quilt in Ithaca back in June, and all four of my sisters were here, and we had friends and people. We had 90-year-old people that had watched Katie grow up come and help quilt.
That's such a wonderful, wonderful story. And that's one of the wonderful traditions of quilting, is that, yes, you can produce a piece entirely by yourself, but you can also do it as a community. We have, each time we do the show, we have a raffle quilt to raise money to cover the expenses,
to
support the guild. And it's always both pieced and applique, because there are some quilters in the group who prefer one over the other. Mm-hmm. And so we produce a quilt made by 30 or 40 sets of hands, each of us doing some piece that, you know, and putting in a little bit of love.
Right. Right.
So it's a wonderful tradition.
Yep. It is. And from that, in my family, it was also embroidery and stitching. Mm-hmm. You know, the sampler, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. That
yes.
was one of the things that hung in the kitchen. I grew up in, you know, there were seven of us kids in a two-bedroom house with a kitchen, a living room, and an outhouse. And so there were two or three things that were handmade, hung up on the wall, and they had to do with fabrics in both cases. And that's how we partly became so tied to them. Why traditions and beyond? That's the theme of this year, or is that the theme every
That's
year?
The theme every year.
Every year, okay.
And it's because we are doing some very traditional kinds of quilting. The guild reproduced a quilt that the History Center here in Ithaca has an antique quilt. They have the original, and the guild members of the guild made a replica of it, and so that way there's sort of a backup. The antique can be protected, but people can see and hear about quilting. So, and many of our members do hand sewing as well as hand quilting.
Right.
Others do everything by machine and also combinations. So there's a whole range of kinds and styles of quilting, and that's what the name says, traditions and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How large is the group?
I'm not sure exactly, but we're over 100 members, somewhere about 120 or so, I think. We don't all come to every meeting. We have two meetings a month. But there's usually probably about 40 or 50 people at each meeting. And we have lectures, and we share information, and we do business when we have to, and we do a lot of chatting and sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally we also, well, not occasionally, every year we have work meetings where we bring our sewing machines and make quilts to donate to a variety of organizations.
That's neat. So the quilt show Traditions and Beyond 2017 will be at the Field House at TC3 in Dryden, October 7 and 8 from 10 to 5.
That's right.
And if you are into quilts, we encourage you to check it out.
And if you've never been into quilts, well, check it out, and you may get caught.
Yes. It is a beautiful art. It is a beautiful art. And in another version of my life, I helped facilitate the process of the creation of a set of quilts that are in lieu of stained glass in a local church.
Mm.
So the woman who was designing them would bring her designs to a creative life class, and we would respond to them and offer feedback. And so the whole community in many ways participated in what went into those quilts, as well as quilting them.
Wonderful.
And so, yeah. So there are six of them, and they're on the order of 10 feet wide by 13 feet tall. They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's been a big part of my life, too. Thank
Wonderful.
You for bringing. So you think about the next piece of music, and I'll do the station ID.
Okay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Amy Truman.
And why don't we play Beautiful?
Aha.
You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. I'm Eric Clay, your host, and our guest on this hour is Amy Truman. So Amy, you've had a career in academia. You've had raised children, five children. What did this pretty much fit the life you thought you were going to live growing up, or did you just kind of were you just open to life as it unfolded? How did you kick off into this ocean of your life?
Well, I think the latter. I think I just was open to things as they unfolded. I wasn't much of a planner.
Uh-huh.
But I suppose the one piece that was different from what I expected happened quite a while ago now. I fell in love with a man who had three children. And so my first three children are stepchildren.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that was an interesting, sometimes challenging, sometimes wonderful experience. So I certainly didn't expect to, at the age of 28, I think, suddenly have three children, ages
wow.
3, 6, and 9. And then... many years later, we decided to have more children, mm-hmm. and had some trouble, so we adopted our wonderful second youngest son from Romania, uh-huh. and that was quite an adventure. And a month later, I was pregnant with our last son. So
well, I heard this story before.
So those were some surprises I wouldn't have predicted. Yeah, yeah. But I think that it gave me the opportunity to develop a much broader sense of what it means to parent and to love and to be flexible.
And to choose.
And to choose, yes. So it keeps things interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to the beginning of that question, and I'm going to ask what's going to sound like probably a dumb question to most listeners, because in many ways we ought to be open to what's in front of us rather than too planful.
Right.
And yet many of us have a personality that wants to have the control or the illusion of control that planning provides, or we have families that kind of, if we don't have those expectations, they certainly find them for us. So what about your experience growing up or your personality helped you to be more just open to what unfolded?
Oh my gosh, that's hard.
It's a hard question.
Whether it was just personality.
Were they just in the moment? I mean, they're four sisters, your grandmother's generation.
Yep, five sisters.
There was lots of people around. I mean, there's a sense in which it's just all happened and you don't have to make it happen.
Well, that's true. And I was one of the younger ones, so I got...
It happened before you.
It happened before me, and I kind of followed along.
Yeah.
I think that was very much a piece of who I was growing up. Sometimes I look back and don't respect the young woman that I was. I was very easily influenced by boyfriends along the way,
uh-huh.
which was a very traditional way to be as a girl in my generation,
and
I think.
And it was how you were taught to be.
Is how I was taught to be. And so if this boyfriend was interested in this, I was interested in this.
Right.
And then the next one would carry me in another direction. And so perhaps I should be less disrespectful of myself at that time and realize that it gave me that flexibility, perhaps, or it gave me that openness to exploring new things.
If it didn't give you the flexibility, it made you comfortable with it.
Yeah, it made me comfortable with different styles and different experiences. So I should appreciate myself that way a little bit more. That's an interesting insight. But I also believe a little bit in birth order dynamics. And I was the second child, and usually the first child is sort of pushed to be a particular way, and the second child is sort of left alone to figure it out.
And were you the second of two?
I was the second of two,
right.
mm-hmm. and the second daughter. So sometimes I think if they're different genders, it's a different dynamic. But I was certainly the more flexible. I am and continued to be the more flexible of the two. If my sister hears this, I think she already knows that.
And if not, you can discuss it afterwards. I have four older sisters. We're born on average about 2 years apart, and then I have an older brother who came 4 years later, and then there was one who died 3 years after him, and then 4 years later I was born, and then behind me 3 years there was another one. So we have like three families.
Mm-hmm.
There's the four sisters who are like, when they get together, they don't have to tell each other anything because they make something in the kitchen and they just hand each other the tool and the whatever.
They know exactly what the other one's going to do.
And the older brother who was like an only child because he was the long-awaited son on a farm family, even though everybody had... My sisters all went to college in the 50s and early 60s, which was not necessarily common for that area. And they you know, were very proud of that. And they pulled their own on all sorts of ways. There were not roles that were really gendered stratified. In lots of rural places, that the roles aren't so heavily gender defined.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like the older of two, but I was on the tail end of a whole tribe. So it didn't, make, yeah, I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. As you have lived with being a parent, step parent, have you worked at one institution for 35 years? How many different roles did you have over those years?
At TC3? Yeah. For 27 years, I was a counselor. Mm-hmm. But one of the wonderful things about community college is that people aren't quite as limited in their roles as they are in larger universities. Mm-hmm. And so I was also, for part of that time, I was the assistant to the president for affirmative action. Mm-hmm. For part of that time, I was the president of the faculty association, our professional union. I was teaching classes part-time, intro to psych, human sexuality, some goal setting and decision making courses. So I had a lot of varied sub
roles in the university, I mean, in a college setting.
Right. Yeah. And then later on, I was the director of counseling for a few years, and then finally dean of student life. Mm-hmm. So it was a wonderful experience. One of the things that TC3 was very good at was developing leadership within the staff. And so I went to some wonderful programs for leadership development, and not expecting to put it into a formal role. I was a counselor at the time, and I was the president of the union, so I thought that might be helpful in that role. Right. But when a few people changed roles and retired, the dean position was available, and it felt mm-hmm. very good to be respected enough to be offered that position.
Right. I'm going to ask a question that's going to come up at the change in a slightly different way. What experience may have have you had to grow suspicious of what you once held as a core commitment because your experience has proven otherwise? Or what may have forced you to change your understanding or your way of living out one of your core values?
Oh my gosh.
And that may not be resonant. I mean, I can ask dead end questions. So
you know, and part that of the show, may have to be one of them.
Yeah. And it's because if it's not obvious, then it's not. Yeah.
One of the things that's important to me, and maybe I'm going off in a totally different direction from what you were thinking. I was raised in a household that sort of assumed liberalness, mm-hmm. politically, socially. Mm-hmm, sure. But I grew up in a very homogeneous community, so right. I didn't have to really live it very much. Over the years, I suppose that's been something that I've had to come to terms with. How do I put into to action and reality the expectation of not having biases in relation to groups who are different from me? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When I grew up not knowing anyone, perhaps in one of those groups, so. So that has been something that I've struggled with. Certainly, since early in my career, that's been a core belief that I've had to work on. For example, as dean of student life, I supervised our director of multicultural services, and I certainly have been an advocate for students of color and for exploring issues of racism mm-hmm. and oppression and privilege. And yet when he and I would sometimes have conversations, I wouldn't get something that he was trying to tell me. And we'd have to talk it through until I got it. I really kind of understood at a new level what it was like to be an African American in this country. Mm-hmm. For those who are listening to this, I'm white, and so I suppose for anybody, that's always an ongoing process. But I suppose earlier in my career, I thought that I, quote, got it, understood those dynamics. And later, as things progress, I realized that nobody can get it completely. I have to keep working harder and harder to understand how somebody else experiences their life and experiences those elements. As someone who's Jewish, I understand anti-Semitism and the feeling that one gets when you have that kind of experience. But each of those kinds of oppressions are a little different. And right. So I think that, I don't know, am I going off in a weird direction?
You're making me think of different rhetoric.
It's a process. And so now politically, I try to be pretty active. I'm working for the Dreamers and support Black Lives Matter and in as many as and the best ways that I can.
I'm going to just digress for a second.
Sure.
The community that I grew up in this little community in Northwest Missouri, 70 miles from Kansas City, the president of the National Farmers Organization was there, and that was a descendant organization of the agrarian revolt of the 1870s and 1880s. And the people in this congregation spanned a lot of different views theologically, politically, or whatever. The term you used was liberal, which kind of contrasts with either conservative or reactionary or fundamentalist. But the growing up in that community, these people had to live with each other because there were only 1,000 in the town and at most 1,000 in the outlying rural area. And they were you were either a big-hearted person or you were a small-hearted person. If you were a nominal liberal with a small heart, you couldn't really deal with others, even though in theory you could. You might be pro-union, but you weren't very flexible as a human being. You could be conservative and a big-hearted person. You just didn't want, you wanted to have space for everybody, and people needed to have that space where they didn't have to push each other around too much. You know, and there's just, so this notion of how you came then to listen to the African-American who described something you weren't aware you were oblivious to. Or not. Yeah. That is more a function, from my point of view and from my experience, of growing your heart.
That's a great way of putting it.
And we need a lot of that on a lot of different perspectives in this particular culture, because we don't have to hug each other and love each other in that sense of being in each other's faces, but we do need space.
Well said.
Enough of a sermon on a Sunday morning. my other hat was as a preacher, but we'll... what I like to close the show with, and we're coming down to just about the last 10, 12 minutes, is what do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, which for me adds up to spiritually? How do you know you need to do it? What do you notice that makes you realize you need to do it? But what are some of the things you do daily, weekly, monthly?
Well, that's pretty easy. I've already mentioned my two primary, three primary ways of taking care of myself.
Pickleball.
Pickleball or other workouts, running and so forth. So being physically active is very important to me. Sewing is going into my sewing room and working on a quilt is an absolutely therapeutic pastime for me. And the other is meditation and mindfulness. Those are the three things that I purposefully pay attention to. And I know that I need any one of those when I start wondering what is it that I have to do. I think a little piece of my personality, which I know comes from my mom, is... you're supposed to be busy. You're supposed to be productive and get things done. And so if nothing needs to be done and I'm starting to feel edgy because I'm not being productive, I realize that I need to take a deep breath. And whether that deep breath is through going out and playing physical activity or whether it's meditating or sewing, the sewing part is not so much the being productive as it is going into myself and being creative.
Right.
So that has a little different feel to it than having to wash the dishes and vacuum the carpet.
Right. But yeah, it's productive in the aesthetic sense.
That's right. I mean,
making the jewelry and the making the clothes that were sent to you when you were in college.
That's right.
Yeah. So when did you, these things you have described are mostly later in life things.
Mm-hmm.
When did you learn that you had a responsibility to take care of yourself, that it wouldn't either just work out or you were reacting to other things like the boyfriend who showed you into stuff that when did you learn that you needed to kind of sail your own ship emotionally and self-care?
Well, I think that was one of the wonderful parts of having a blended family and having stepchildren. It was stressful at the mm-hmm. beginning. We had them half the week. We had a split custody arrangement. And it was stressful for them, and it was stressful for me and their dad. And so it became clear that I had to find ways to take care of myself. Sometimes that meant removing myself from the situation. Sometimes it meant doing things purposefully with them to help all of our stress levels. And so I think that's the stage of my life, which is now, oh gosh, about 35 or 40 years ago.
Well, you were in your 30s
started,
at that point.
Right. Yeah. Late 20s and early 30s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's when that started to dawn on me that I needed to pay attention to taking care of their needs, but I also needed to take care of myself in order to be able to do that well. So I think that's one of the periods I can identify that I realized I had to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And were you able to, you talk about taking care of them, but were you able to make that lesson available to them earlier than how you learned it?
In terms of taking care of themselves?
Yeah, to kind of hold that out as, this is what I'm doing for me, and this is what I'm doing for and with you, and what can you do for yourself?
Well, now that you ask that question, I think we had those conversations along the way.
Mm-hmm. Some of the older generations, the kids just kind of grew up as emotionally feral children.
Yes, that was my family.
And
we'll have fun, and the kids will be okay. They'll figure it out.
And that works when you've got a lot of people around you that are looking after you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work when you don't.
That's true. That's true. And my parenting style was to talk, mm-hmm. to talk about whatever it was that was coming up. And so we did have those kinds of conversations. And whether they were able to take it in or not, you'd have to ask them.
Right.
But but we did focus on it some.
So, and I guess partly, was it the stress of what you chose to go through? Or was it partly the training or the career that you chose to take on that made you...
Probably a combination, because being a counselor, I was in the habit of listening to people and reflecting what I was hearing, and I remember a lot of hard conversations, especially with my oldest stepchild, my stepson, who was struggling. He was the oldest during his parents' separation, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the difficulty fell on his shoulders, and so he struggled, and we had some real deep heart-to-heart conversations over the years, both when he was quite, small, 9 to 12,
sure.
and later in life.
Now as you, how is your self-care different in retirement from when you were working?
I have a lot more time for it. It's wonderful.
You do? Because some people don't in the first year or two of retirement.
Well, I'm very busy, but a lot of the busyness is doing things that I love.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I didn't love work. I really did. But I wouldn't have categorized it as self-care so much.
Uh-huh.
I think I have made this transition pretty well and have kind of structured so many of the things that I love to do into my daily life.
Right. And you had said, you had made a comment in passing, and that partly in your particular marriage, your partner, your husband, you're able to do many things together. How is that similar or different from others that you that you know, because you highlighted that point earlier on.
I've seen other couples mm-hmm. where they have wonderful loving marriages or relationships, but they go off with their own friends and do many things separately. And I think that there are pros and cons to each style, but John and I do many things together, and we enjoy it, and we support each other. We play mm-hmm. pickleball together. We golf together. We do word puzzles together. Right. We just have a lot of common interests, and so that level of companionship is a fabulous thing for me. I feel so lucky.
Yeah, and working together. I mean, the image that you married into a full family, a tribe, mm-hmm. And you had to work together initially. I mean, I imagine. And for me, the challenge has been to find that kind. It's almost like running the family farm. For me, I finally found a relationship where we can be in this process of in each other's work and lives in a way that is it feels like we're supportive and not intrusive,
mm-hmm.
but also have strong friends that are separate.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It is a wonderful way.
It sounds like we're both very lucky people.
Yeah. So we're coming down to the end of the show. What should we close with?
Boy, I was going to go with "You're Only Human" because we were talking about some challenges, but I think that we should end with "What a Wonderful World."
Okay, and
I'm a real feel-good kind of person. Uh-huh,
uh-huh. And so this is Herman's Hermits and wonderful world. And Amy, it's been good to get to know you.
Thank you, Eric.
And
you too.
I'm going to put in one last plug for the quilt show October 7th and 8th. That's next weekend at the Field House at TC3, 10 to 5 p.m. And whether you've, especially if you've never really seen quilts go, but if you're familiar with them, I think from what I've heard today, you will be pleased.
Thank you so much.